This talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Cultivating the Empty Field by Master Hong Tur. The misunderstanding of many lifetimes. Emptiness is without characteristics. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. Thus one can know oneself. Thus the self is completed. We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. With boundless wisdom, journey beyond this, forgetting accomplishments. Straightforwardly abandon stratagems and take on responsibility. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity, not a single atom of dust outside yourself. So you're kind of getting a Hong Chi sandwich over these few days. Shugen Roshi yesterday spoke of the guidepost of a silent illumination, and we'll pick it up tomorrow, if that's still true. And just to repeat some of his life, it's a 12th century Zen master who was a predecessor and a great influence on Dogen. This is one of his practice instructions, so it's something we are to do, to engage. And I found a picture of Hong Tur at the beginning of Cultivating the Empty Field because I had wondered what he looked like. And he's got eyebrows like Hogan. And he is shaved, but he has like, it's all dots, pointillism. He's got a little mustache and then kind of like part of an hourglass goatee, but very, again, dotted, so it's like a shadow. But it looks very articulate, like it's not like a scruffy Sesshin look, unless that's the only place his hair grew. But this is a traditional woodcut of him. Not sure when it was done or if it's somebody's imagination, but to start. And in the back, Mizumi Roshi described him as the tongueless one prescribes with wordless sparklings a medicine of non-dual existence for the bodiless one. That's a beautiful bunch of sparkling sentence there. When we appreciate the effect of this medicine, we know that Master Hong Tur's 834-year-old relics are still fresh and warm and vitally universal and here today. And I often joke that if I could meet him, I would probably ask him out. I guess what I would want to do is just have him read his poetry. Like, I'd just lay on my back and look at the clouds and just ask him to read. So here we are in Sesshin, which is collecting our heart and mind. In a sense, a gathering, a collection. This is the harvest Sesshin. So we could think of this as harvesting our hearts and our minds and ceremony, ceremoniously. Ceremonia, the Latin root, is with reverence, with sacredness, with healing. So in this room, we collectively are gathering together our griefs, our joys, our sorrows, our broken trusts, in reverence and sacredness to make whole what has never been apart, restore. And we do this somewhat knowingly. You've stepped in knowing that you're coming to a retreat within the Dharma. And then the Buddha appears for your sake, for my sake. Buddha enters me, and I enter Buddha. It's often spoke of to have this be wholehearted, which means that the fullness of practice in any state, we can be in any state, that's wholehearted, to practice exactly what is. Usually we're looking for, of course, a different package than what's here a lot of the time. But in any state, to simply let be without trying to eliminate or manage. And in that way, it can possibly be illuminated. It can be revealed. Whatever we are, whatever's coming, can be revealed as awakened nature without exception, anything. And we know we can and do divide just about anything. And we know the experience that we can close the divide. We all know this experience of being undivided. We've had it at moments. One divided activity, one undivided activity. We release the thinking, discursive mind, and we're encouraged, just chant. Just chant. Just eat. Just walk. And just poop, as we were offered yesterday. And I think we yearn, we long to return to this nowhere natural space. Perhaps that is what we're continually seeking, because we know it, that that's our nature. The universe is undivided, non-dual. Dual with divisions, non-dual with divisions and differences. And wholeheartedness is sometimes used to define what was mentioned yesterday, virya, effort, joyful effort. And when Roshi mentioned yesterday, there's just some words that we see that set us off. I remember when we got the pamphlet for the Seven Factors of Enlightenment, joyful effort was two words that gave me something. Just those two words together, joyful effort, out of all the lists, that one sort of gave me a little smile, a zing. And I joyfully found this quote by our scholarly Theravadan, very serious monk, often Thanissara Bhikkhu. He writes, "The path doesn't save all its pleasure for the end. You can enjoy it now." I was very happy to find that from him. The path doesn't save all its pleasure for the end. You can enjoy it now. So here we are, all involved in the harvesting of this very central place of our being, our heart, our body, body-mind, as Dogen would say, is one word. So I'd like to speak about the heart. The heart I'm referring to is the whole emotional system, our whole emotional, wholehearted way. Because Hongxi says, illumination has no emotional afflictions. Hongzhi. So, the emotional body is a wonderful, fantastic way to enter into anything and everything that needs to be seen. Now, some of us may have been tagged as, you're so emotional. I was one of them. And you might have grown up feeling apologetic for it, being sensitive, feeling. My mom used to use this tone like, gosh, you're so emotional. And I would get even more upset, more emotional. And today, if she said that to me, I'd say back to her very lovingly, thank you, it's true. Let's not pretend. And we have not been guided into this inquiry of what is the makeup of feeling. Then, how we can awaken to see what is true until we come to practice such as this, where we can sit down and wonder about emotions, what we're feeling, what's going on in our heart. To be awake on the level of emotion means to no longer be deriving a solid sense of self from how and what we feel. If we feel good, if we feel lousy, tired, awake, healthy, sick, within this, we are no longer finding a self through what we experience. Usually our sense of self, as we know, is linked to and enmeshed in what we feel. We say to ourselves, I feel angry. I'm angry. And looking deeply into this, we can say what we're really saying in that moment is that my sense of self is fused with my anger. And if we look more deeply, we see we actually cannot be defined by an emotion that runs through the body. The fusion is an illusion. So in Sesshin, this collecting of the heart, mind, we can go into this deeper level of examination and inquiry into just about everything that goes on. It's hard to coast unconsciously. We see we can actually We see exactly how we come to be. What we feel does not tell us who and what we are. When we really see this, this is actually awakening, awakening through the heart. It tells us what we feel, period, end of sentence. And what we feel doesn't need to be avoided, but it does not define us. And the more we shut out the body, the feeling, the more we retreat to thinking. You notice that? And this tends towards disembodying. And the intensity of our compulsive thinking is in direct proportion to the extent that we're not willing to experience our body in a direct way. That word might be we disassociate with our body. When we're no longer defining self on the level of emotion, our sense of self is liberated from the conflicted feelings that are on this emotional level. But of course, we cannot get to this by avoiding what we feel. That's the big bypass. Leap over. Ignore. Think we have to get to some other exalted state. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. He says, emptiness is without characteristics. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. Dogen writes this in another way, it seems. Relying on what is concrete in our life, which cannot be relied on except in relation to that which is like empty space. It's the only way we can rely on it. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness, exactly form. Undivided. Our emotions, our feelings are actually fantastic pointers, direct pointing to the heart and to what is unsolved in our being. And for a long time in practice, this can be very hard to accept, let alone when we apply the piercing, quietly profound radiance we possess and patience to see. For a while, at least from my experience, we may want to see a self wearing the clothes looking like a resolved being. Ouch. I think we might know this too. We're pretending and inside we're just trembling with fear. Because we think we might be detected, that we're a hot mess, and not allowing it to be seen, even by ourselves. That's all really where it needs to happen. This is it. Defining me when we resist, not allowing the feeling, what is here. And of course, that only makes the feeling stronger. And I think we all know that what's not serving us, whether we like it or not, will either both or either implode or explode. And usually it's both in some way. Just like nature herself. When nature needs to right itself in accord with cause and effect, a natural balance will come. But we try our darnest to manage and hold it all together. And as a practitioner, what we learn is that we can respond in other ways. There's a response ability in many different ways. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. Yeah. At the base of dividing, if we look at the base, is fear, like many things. Fear of being undivided, actually. Isn't that weird? I was thinking about that. Like, we're so used to being divided that there's almost a fear of being undivided, of being complete, even though we yearn. I don't know. I find that in myself. Insecure, then grasping at that personal solidness, false security, trying to maintain personal security. Right? Exhausting. Oh my God. Holding on as tight as we can so we don't get punctured. Because then what? What's on the other side? We don't know. Oh my God. We hear that all the time. Don't know. It's a real thing. We don't know. Because when we let go, it means we're leaping into the unknown. We won't know who we are in the ways we had. And even if we've had an inkling of that, a small taste, that is the liberated state. And this is the revolution the Buddha taught us, to no longer be defining ourselves through what we feel. Our sense of self is liberated from the conflicted feelings that are on the emotional level. So our bodies are great truth meters. You notice that? I'm fine. My mother used to, I can't lie very well. And my mother was always like, she'd just take one look at me and she goes, "You're not telling me the truth." And I was like, damn. I was saying something else, but my body was doing something else. And my complexion, and she was just... As soon as we go into the emotional states of divisiveness, of dividing, forming and expressing division like hate, jealousy, blame, greed, all those juicy states, envy. You know the rest. You got your list. We know right there we're perceiving from a state of division. It's good. So those emotions that we feel like that can be flags, any color you want. We're used to red ones. Reminding us that we're not seeing the true nature of things. When those emotions come, jealousy, greed, blame, envy, your list, it means we're not seeing the true nature of things. Having turned yourself around, he says, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. All of it. Emotional turmoil tells us we have an unconscious belief that isn't true. And this is good news. Difficult news sometimes, because it's like we don't want to hear the good news because we're in this state, which is actually very informative. If we can hang in there and not go to like, something's wrong, I don't want this. That's the hard work. But it means we're no longer unconscious. If we see it, we're no longer unconscious. We are getting conscious. And then we can make the effort to bring in the inquiry. Do something possible, like wonder. What a great word. I wonder. What am I believing about myself right now? Become curious to remember the joyful effort, the energy that we have to wonder, to question. This practice of remembering, which is part of mindfulness, an aspect of mindfulness, and this is from Joseph Goldstein's Satipatthana, mindfulness book, when he's writing about the Satipatthana Sutra. And sati means remembering. And it refers to the practice of wholesome recollection that supports and energizes us on this path of awakening. So we want to remember the practice of wholesome recollection that supports and energizes us on this path of awakening. The recollections include the virtues of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, as well as one's own generosity and ethical conduct. Reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha helps arouse confidence and faith in the mind, enlarging the context of our own particular struggles. We remember all the ups and downs of practice are part of a much larger journey. On the night of Buddha's enlightenment, he overcame the armies of Mara, the forces of desire, aversion, restlessness, and conceit. Every time that we meet these same forces in our own minds, we are also sitting under the Bodhi tree of awakening. We understand that the Bodhisattva's struggle is our own. It enlarges our perspective when we consider the magnitude of what it means to overcome the habits of seduction that keep us narrow-minded and closed-hearted. When we practice these liberation teachings of the Buddha, we are practicing a path of purification that the Buddha discovered and that so many others have accomplished. One of the most inspiring phrases to me, Goldstein says, is the traditional declaration of awakening spoken by people who have completed the journey. Done is what had to be done. Recollecting Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha reminds us that the awakening is possible for us as well. Understanding it's part of the journey, a way to study the self, the misunderstanding of many lifetimes, and the possibility in a very good way to forget the self. Really forget. To enter wonder when it's here. Wow, this is a strong feeling. And what assumptions am I making that are being reproduced in my body and manifested as emotion? Curiosity asks, oh wow, I'm hating this person. I'm hating this situation right now. Fascinating. This powerful feeling, it's not me. I so believe it is. Maybe I can turn the light around into not hating this illusion, that this too is the wondrously bright field from the beginning. We enter then the realm of possibility, not impossibility, where a lot of us get stalled, right? It's impossible. I'm never gonna. We know the song. We can build up a whole world of impossibility, which is only based on believing in impossibility. And possibility, is not based on just believing something else. It's based upon exploring the possible in the moment, which is something very different. found this little story which I think shows that a little bit, I hope. Did for me. There was a little boy who says to his mother, "Mom, imagine you are surrounded by a herd of hungry tigers all wanting to devour you. What's it like? What would you do? How would you feel?" She says, "Oh, I would be terrified. I wouldn't know what to do. What would you do?" And the little boy says, "I'd stop pretending." Yep. So the emotional body is an entry point into any illusion, anything that can cause a sense of separation. The zazen we're engaged in is the practice of coming back down to earth. And coming down to earth is not easy. We don't always arrive intact. We've been living in our heads in the air for a long time. What did he say? Many lifetimes. A long time. Kalpas. We are being called from every direction to re-inhabit the bodies we have left behind, and contrary to what we may think, the body does have to come along with us. We can't awaken from the neck up. It's not a head kind of thing. Whole body mind. That's Dogen's one word. He implores us, see forms, hear sounds wholeheartedly, and we will understand intimately. We will remember who we are when we do that. I was reading a piece of an article recently of nothing we don't know, how many of us are inundated all day long and into the night with a constant flow of information. It said that when you order a single cup of coffee these days, say organic decaf vanilla latte, extra hot, you make more decisions than your grandparents made in a week. Now, if this is true, ponder the levels of connection that our brains and hearts are trying to digest. In 1 month, many of us connect with more people online and in person than our grandparents did in their entire lifetimes. No wonder we're overwhelmed. This is why we say, turn your cell phones off and turn your hara on. For real. What chance can we do that? Not be inundated. This is it. So if you're sneaking it up there, you got a couple days to tuck it. Quick look. It's up to you. It's up to you. We can be knocked off emotional balance so very easily and walk around not knowing. So in zazen, we're making a relationship, coming down to the earth, grounding in what is groundless. This is what the Buddha modeled. We have to come down to the earth to get off the ground. If you read Inmo, it speaks of that. This was the language the Buddha was communicating, sitting under the tree. That was Buddha's witness to Mara. "By whose authority," Mara asks, "do you take this seed of awakening?" We say that to ourselves, right? Mara's in us. "By whose authority you take this seed of awakening?" And he reaches down, touches the earth. This is my witness. I'm here. I'm embodied. To stay, then, rest, open, and allow the earth to bring in stability. Know we're supported. We got a floor here. We're on it. And then that moves up to the mind to relax and release. So we use that grounding. I spoke about the bottom of the spine as very bottom, as that place that extends levels and levels and levels and levels to the earth, as well as we can go upwards to the skies and boundless in all directions. That is this body. But often we're trying to oversee, control, manage, real estate managers, trying hard to make it be the way we want it to be. Hongzhi says, straightforwardly, abandon strategies, stratagems, and take on responsibility, relaxed and very clear. No need to create or manage. I don't think I ever read where the Buddha says we're trying to manage our lives. Haven't come across that line. But he did ask us to look at what we crave. Second Noble Truth. Buddha said, look at your cravings, your habits, your patterns, so that we can see it and say, okay, this is how I do things. I need to discontinue this. Or continue it. Oh my gosh. In the wonder persona. Oh my gosh. Look what I'm craving. But to look at them and see how these things take us away from the relationship with that natural unfolding of our life. How we are organically, naturally unfolding with everything and everyone. He says, when we begin to crave, we become ignorant. We don't know a different kind. We've forgotten. We don't remember that kind. We forget this interrelationship, this interdependence. We get very busy, get turned away, and suffer. We're not flowing with what is being put into our lives. We meet many fears. Fear of the unknown, loss, humiliation, disbelief in our capabilities. Trying to eliminate it. We commit to staying. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. Contact it with total sincerity. Generate faith, confidence, courage, enthusiasm, perseverance. To see for yourself. To see yourself. And as soon as we hear our mind say, it shouldn't be like this. This shouldn't have happened. I've got my mom in here a lot today. My mom she has all these little things she would say. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. That was her. I'd say, I wish I shoulda, woulda, coulda. When we hear that kind of language, usually we're experiencing that internal division. It's immediate. Why do we experience division? Because we fight with what's here, what's real, or what's reality, what is. We don't like it, or we love it and we want it to stay. That's the way it works. And as soon as there's something in us that judges it, condemns it, says it shouldn't be, we feel the division, like it's like natural. But we never win with arguing with what is. It is. We don't win. Worse still, a searing kind of one is that when what we're arguing with is happened 20 years ago, it could be yesterday morning. But if we were arguing, we're trapped by it. And then if we really look, a lot of what we're arguing with isn't really based on what's true. Great. And within our emotions, we may also not divide, right? You've seen this too. We've all experienced this too. There never was a division. We can be sad without feeling divided. We can feel grief without being divided. We can cry our eyes out without being divided. We can feel a certain amount of anger without being divided. If we discover this, then it's not an illusion. It fulfills us. It fulfills us. And actually, in that moment when we're not doing the other elimination and dividing, and we just let it be what it is, joy. A measure of joy comes through. Joy, you can't, it arrives. You don't make it. I think it comes. And then that's when we get flooded sometimes. Now we're back to how much we love the Dharma. We feel patient. We feel generous. Our virtues are like soaring in, right? All those things flower in that moment. Our curiosity blossoms, our gratitude, our connectedness, that we are the wholehearted way. Thus one can know oneself, thus the self is completed. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. This is how it goes, and this is why we continue. We see something. True inquiry is experiential. It's not trying to heal us or stop us from having unpleasant feelings. We're not seeking to stop something from happening. It has no goal other than itself, and that's all we care about. So I have another story I love in closing. It's about Mahasattva Fu. Mahasattva Fu was a brilliant scholar in China. And one day he was lecturing to a large group of people on the Parinirvana Sutra. People had come from a great distance to listen to him. And in the middle of his talk, a Zen monk started laughing hysterically. Can you imagine? He's giving this lecture on the Parinirvana Sutra and a monk just starts laughing hysterically. It's as if one of you started laughing right now, which you are, hysterically. Fu quickly finished his lecture. He went back to his quarters and asked his attendant to bring the Zen monk in for tea. When the Zen monk came in, Fu said, "I've studied these sutras for the last 20 years, and I've studied with the great masters here in China. What is it that you saw? What did I say that was wrong?" The Zen monk said, "You didn't say anything wrong. What you said was absolutely true, but it's all talk. It's so obvious you don't know the thing itself. You don't see the thing itself." Gulp. And Fu, this wonderful man, says, "What can I do so I can experience the thing itself?" And the Zen monk says, "You should stay in your quarters and sit zazen. If you do that for 10 days, I'll bet you'll see what I'm pointing to. Abandon your thoughts, have no discriminations. just see into your inner world. And Fu did that. He told his attendant not to bother him. He went into his room and he sat zazen. And after several days, he was sitting late at night, he heard a flute playing in the courtyard. Ah! He ran over to where the Zen monk was staying and he knocked on the door. The monk said, "Who is it?" And Fu said, "It's me." And the monk said, "Well, who are you?" And Fu said, "I'm myself." And the monk said, "What kind of drunk are you carousing around here late at night? Go back to bed." And he slammed the door. And Fu went back to his room and he wrote a poem. "In those days, I remember when I had as yet no Satori. Each time I heard the flute played, my heart grieved. Now I have no idle dream over my pillow. I just let the player play whatever tune he likes." What I love about this story is the surrender of Fu, his ability to go deeper, his readiness to experience even more deeply. All of us should remember, yes, perhaps we've had a glimpse, but it's just the beginning. The awakened heart loves the world as it is not just as it could be, and it's not just as it could be. The more we awaken at the heart level, the more we experience unconditional love, which is one of our deepest callings, to just love. Our sadness, our loneliness, our fear, and our anxiety are not mistakes or one continuous mistake. They're not obstacles to our path. They are the path. The freedom we are longing for is not found in the eradication of these, but in the information they carry. We need not transcend anything here, but be willing to become more deeply intimate with our lived, embodied experience. Nothing is missing. Nothing is out of place. Nothing need be sent away. As Hongzhi would offer us from the point of view of the awakened heart-mind, all the hindrances in our lives are themselves simply the manifestation of the luminous field of truth which we have the opportunity to illuminate and shed in ongoing awakenings. Hongzhi wrote, "Directly arriving here, you will be able to recognize the mind-ground Dharma field that is the root source of the 10,000 forms germinating with unwithered fertility. These flowers and leaves are the whole world. So we are told that a single seed is an uncultivated field. Do not weed out the new shoots, and the self will flower."
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.